School is out. Now let's get real with Mike Ditzenberger and Miles O'Shea.
Hey, Miles.
Mike, what's up?
Not a lot. How's it going?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing all right. Thinking about teaching and learning like we usually do. So this week, we're going to continue on our train of thought, I guess. We've talked about the who. We've talked about the why. We're into the what.
The what?
Yeah.
What is the what?
The what is, I'm going to use some terminology that we've talked about before. The what is the powers that be have told us what they want us to teach kids. And when I say the powers that be, let's not get that twisted. These are the powers. These are the people that pay our paychecks. These are people that pay our salaries, that give us money. And because of that, I think we owe them to point our needle in the direction of where they want us to go. They're the ones asking us to do this job. So, but I don't want to discredit some of the other things that are what is like, how am I going to do that? What am I bringing into it in addition to those things? So let's talk about the what as far as, I guess, the state or the organization, maybe the school, maybe the curriculum. Let's get into that a little bit. Let's talk about what teachers and building leaders are doing in regard to what.
So you're talking about those funny numbers on a list of standards and eligible content that my state has put somewhere on the World Wide Web and given to me probably in a hard copy somewhere. The stuff that my state, my government is saying as part of my job I'm supposed to teach.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
We've talked about this a little bit, Mike, and the what starts with like that big thing, right? As a teacher of this content, this is what you're required to teach. That starts with the regulations and guidelines from your state. I would ask anybody teaching in any space to reflect on how familiar you are with that set of information, with the actual guidelines that someone is saying that this is what you're supposed to teach. How familiar are you with that?
Yeah, and I really shout this out to first-year teachers, newer teachers. I would say that should be one of the first questions that you have walking into a new job. Where is the curriculum? How does it align with the standards given to me by the higher power? Those would be the first two questions I would have, because I immediately, as a first-year teacher, I want to maybe put as much energy into what I'm teaching as to how I'm teaching in the environment that I do it. Because I know that first-year teachers, when they walk into a building, this is not to get sidetracked, but they think of their classroom and the environment that they want to have. And they put up some decorations to make the environment what they want. They, you know, they might do some lighting type things. And then they get their overall outlook and how they want to work with kids. Okay, I would say that that's half. And then the other half is immediately designing lessons based on that eligible content and start mapping out by month what you're going to teach based on the needs of your kids, and maybe do it by month so that you know, like, instead of just kind of hoping that it all falls together, you organize it a little bit, and then you follow that flow and you assess those things properly.
And I want to get real and keep this real, because I don't ever want this. People who listen might know that we're both administrators. I don't want to ever like be fake with people. And I just want to flashback in my, I just thinking about this as you were saying that, my first year of teaching, I've told this a little bit on the podcast, get down to the room, principal walks away. I sit down at the desk and I think, now what am I going to do? And as a first year teacher, I didn't have a curriculum that someone gave to me, and the state standards and all of those things definitely existed. I didn't peel into those. I looked at the books that I had to teach language arts, to teach English. I talked with the other teachers that were already teaching at the different grade levels in the high school where I was, and that's where I got started, right? So I'm not letting me or anybody else kind of off the hook by saying, hey, we're advocating for this. We've been there. And I made mistakes on this early in my career. And I think part of this whole podcast that we're doing and the whole thing we're trying to do to help people is saying, this is the way we see this now. After 20 some years of experience 40 some between both of us. This is the way we see this happening. So, you know, very early first day, hey, I needed to just have stuff to teach. I would like to go back and tell Miles O'Shea back then, probably younger and better looking, hey, start here, dummy. And I didn't. And I wish someone would have told me that.
Yeah, I agree with you. If somebody would have said, here's the layout of this course, here's where by the end of this course, it would be really nice if all the kids could do these 10 things. Oh my gosh. And I know that like that's very common. And people listening to this might be like, well, that's what curriculum is. I agree that that's exactly what curriculum is. But as that first year teacher who's all hyped up and ready to go and whatnot would have had, like I said, that equal focus on the curriculum as they did on the environment, I would have liked that. Because I'll be honest with you too, as you were being very open about your first years of teaching, I want to be too. I mean, I remember my first couple years of teaching being very like, hey, I just hope I get through this and I don't disappoint people, and that the families, you know, when they talk about the guy in that classroom, it's a positive thing for their kids and for them. I was really focused on that and kind of looking at the book, like you said, like, okay, let's see where the chapters of this book go. And there was a lot to those first years of teaching. But boy, if I would have known, like you said, what's the overall goal? Where do I need to go? And what checkpoints do I need to hit before I reach the end of this course? Oh man, you know, then I think that it could have tracked me into a better way of thinking those first few years. But again, you know, I think that's why we do what we're doing. Like you said, we're here for that.
Right, right. So we're saying that you start with that that's required for you to teach. That's what you need to teach. That's the content. And we're talking about the what. I would advise any teacher of any course, college all the way down to kindergarten or pre-K, when you have all that, then synthesize that into one objective statement for your course. We've talked about goals. We keep talking about goals. When a kid is done with my 10th grade English class, what are they going to get? What's the goal of my 10th grade English class? You better be able to take all of that stuff that you're supposed to teach, that content, and synthesize that to one big idea. That one big one sentence, okay? That's at the top. That's at the very, very top, coming straight from this stuff that I'm required to teach. Kids come into my room on the first day. This is what my English class is about. Boom. That is our ultimate goal right there. That's the what. Now, every unit is going to have a what related to the content and making sure that I'm covering all that. And every lesson is going to have a what related to the unit and related to that stuff that I need to have my students master.
So Miles, I want to ask you a question. Of course, it's going to be a rhetorical question. Maybe it's not. Maybe I'll be surprised by your answer. We have talked a lot about actionable goals or actionable objectives, things that we can see being done. And we've taken that from this old school teacher approach that, you know, when most teachers go through their college training, we talk how not to write objectives about the students will learn, the students will understand, because we can't measure those things all that well. It's very difficult to measure learning, true learning, whether every student has learned something, whether every student has understood something, and we can't really measure an appreciation of something. So would you say that we should also use an actionable goal for the end of the course? All students will, boom, an action word, versus saying all students will understand something, all students will comprehend something, all students will appreciate something. So, because when I'm thinking of 10th grade language arts, I'm thinking we're going to read American authors, or we're going to read world authors, we're going to read literary texts from Europe. Like, I'm thinking it's very specific what genre of reading we're going to do, and then write and analyze those pieces. Like, we usually in the United States, we go from American authors to world authors to maybe we do, we kind of segment it like that. Would you say that we should have an actionable end of course goal too?
Here's what I would say, Mike. When I'm writing my goal statement for the course, I need to be able to measure that. So any goal statement that I write for the what I'm teaching, I need to be able to measure that. Mm-hmm. That's my answer to that. And it should be action related.
And if any listener is having trouble with how I would do that, me personally, I would then go to that higher, let's call it Common Core. I mean, I know some people cringe at that sound, but many districts have adopted some form of a Common Core. Maybe I go to that eligible content that the state has given you. Maybe I go to the curriculum that the district or your school has given you, and I try to compare words between the two to come up with a statement that encompasses what this course is about. So I know if I'm given through my resources, another what, this is what my district has given me, American literature, world literature. I know that the state is saying that students should analyze text and form comparisons. I can now take that and I can take what my school district has said and make a statement saying, by the end of this course, all students will analyze American literature authors one against another, or will pick two authors and compare specific traits between the two using literary elements. I can make a statement from both of those things that will say all students are going to do that at the end of this course. And then from there, start designing units that reach that goal. And then from those units, design lessons that are going to contribute to those units, that are going to contribute to that larger goal. That's what I'm hearing.
Yes, sir. You know, yes, sir. And I don't have this written out, but all students will be able to increase skills of reading, writing, analyzing, interpreting literature to create concrete statements related to themselves and the world. Like, and I probably didn't say that as eloquently as I would sit down and write it, but the converse of that is students will learn about 20th century world literature. Students will learn about the history of blah, 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 blah. Learn about, I can't measure learn about. That's not a good enough goal for me of what I'm setting out to do, because then for my kids, for my students, and me as the teacher, I need to always be gauging my progress toward that goal and to know if I'm hitting it or not. When it's super vague or not measurable at all, that's a bad goal, because then I don't know if I've arrived. And it's sometimes better to write goals like that, because you can just say, you know, it's not measurable. I don't know, then I don't have to hit it or not, right?
Right.
That kind of lets me off the hook. When it's concrete and measurable, my what, I'm not off the hook. I have a clear goal. I know everybody, we're going there and we're going to go there. And maybe I'm missing a little bit during the timeline of this course, and I'm going to adjust, I'm going to assess, I'm going to make changes to make sure that I achieve that overall goal.
Right. I also don't want to leave out some very key elements from this conversation that I know some critics might have, not even critics, but maybe some people who are really thinking and are seasoned within the profession saying, well, hold on a second, because my district has a whole lot of other stuff that they want me to teach too, on top of my subject matter. They want me to teach social emotional learning skills. They want me to teach, how to cope. They want me to teach trauma-informed decision-making. That's true, too. There might be a lot more from a local level that your district may want you to include in your lessons based on the needs of that community. I would put that into the mix, too, and then think about how am I going to pepper those things into, again, let's look at it from a wide scope down to a narrow scope. How am I going to pepper those things into the end of year goal, to my unit goal, or into my daily lesson plans? We create opportunities by doing good planning from that broad approach down to that narrow lesson that give us opportunities to say, oh, this is a great opportunity to incorporate this. Or I noticed in class yesterday that some kids might have been struggling. Maybe I'll pepper this social emotional piece into this because it fits great with the characters that we're reading about. yes, I say that that is also a what, and that is a very challenging what. But again, when you look at the people who are paying us to do this job, they're saying all of these things are important. So I guess that goes into the what as well. Yeah, the job is much more than just teaching a subject. There's so much more to it. But when you think about where those things can go, it really does help you out.
And I've said this before too, Mike. If you would have like pulled me in 2003 and said, would you be advocating for like a standards-based approach kind of outlined by No Child Left Behind, I'd say I'd never say a good thing about that ever. But, you know, from the advent of No Child Left Behind to now in 2025, I feel like there has been such resistance and pushback and bad feelings about those things and what they have done to education. And I think that there are negative aspects of this, but I believe that those are tied to not the assessments, but the way that the assessments are used in education and the way that sometimes they fall short of higher order thinking and aren't able to measure those. But the simple fact that we all have content that a body has decided that this is what we're supposed to teach to kids in a unified way, where I know if I'm teaching someone in the top northernmost part of Pennsylvania or the southernmost eastern part of Pennsylvania, that all students in that state have been provided a similar education in 10th grade, I think that's a huge progress for people and directly tied to equity. And no matter what, no matter where you're coming from, you're going to be exposed to these concepts, skills, and ideas that we all agree upon that are important for a 10th grader to have and to have mastered. I think that's sound. And I think that we kind of need to get away from this whole negative pushback against that. And I know how it has negatively affected some parts of education. I understand that. But I think the basics of this is the what. This is the stuff that you are supposed to teach. That is as sound could be.
Yeah.
And how could you teach anything without that?
Yeah. And I think that we as teachers get frustrated, and I'm going to bring this into play. We get frustrated if we see what we have to teach and we make assumptions about those who are in front of us saying that they don't have a certain skill that would be required of them to come in to learn that. So a prerequisite skill that says, well, my kids can't do this because they weren't ready for it. I'm going to challenge that. I'm going to push back on that a lot because we're not asking you to teach per se all that stuff in the past. I'm showing you something here and now that I want our kids to learn, regardless of what they may or may not have learned in the past. So I want to think about that for a second. I really want to stay on this for a second, because if I'm teaching 10th grade English language arts and I'm going to use American authors and I'm going to compare two American authors to, and we're going to analyze something, how does that have anything to do with something that we did in the past? And I don't want to lean in on saying, well, my kids struggle to read, or my kids aren't interested, or my kids can't do. No, we're not talking about the things that they can't do. We're talking about them gaining an understanding of American authors and comparing one to the other, that I don't want prerequisite knowledge to come into play with this. We might have time in our day later down the line to intervene on those things, to maybe gather those skills up. But we're saying this is what we're teaching this year to everyone. And I'm going to make sure through my goals and objectives that everybody can meet those. And I think it's important that we write those objectives that from that what, that say everybody's going to do this, and I'm not going to get burned out if they don't appreciate it or if they don't understand it or learn it. No, they're going to have doable things that they're going to do daily, weekly, monthly, and at the end of the year to show me that we've done what they want us to do.
And I almost can't believe I'm going to do this. I'm sound like the commercial for the No Child Left Behind Act. Think about just the name, No Child Left Behind. All students will be able to do this. Yeah. By this year, all of our kids are going to have mastered these things. It sounds completely amazing to me, those words. And anytime that we have the what, all of our kids go back to 10th grade, language arts. All of our kids will have mastered these things. And then immediately we say, no, they won't. I want to know why. And anything that you're saying for the why related to that what is going to be an excuse. And like you said, there's no prerequisite knowledge necessary for kids coming to my language arts class that they need to have to do well in my course and to master this. And it's not that they're just going to get by. They're going to have mastered this because that's my job. That's what the state, the governing body, my school district has said we're going to focus on. So it's my job to know what that stuff is, the what, and to deliver it in a real meaningful way where kids can master it. It's my job to be a master of the what. And like that lead off question that I asked, how many people are masters of the what, know exactly what the what is, and are dedicated to mastering and crossing those things off every day? To me, that's what the what is.
Miles, you opened a bit of a can of worms here, and that can of worms is a bit thunderous in my opinion. So I'm not going to apologize, but I am going to add to it. When you said the word excuse, I want to paint the idea that I am not coming down on teachers, on professionals. I am not coming down on any one area. And I'm going to include myself in this statement. I have said in the past, and I don't know if I've ever said it on the podcast before, but I can be known to have said that to me, excuses are just a reason why I'm going to do it again. And so I want to give a personal example of this. So let's say that the superintendent comes to me and says, hey, Mike, I noticed you did not get 4 teacher evaluations done last year. And so now there's 4 teachers that are floating around in the district that don't have a year-end evaluation from last year. That's kind of a big deal. And I say back to the superintendent, well, it's because, you know, these things were put in place. I didn't have enough time. I didn't have enough resources. I couldn't get to it based on all the other stuff that was going on. Me saying all those things would be a reason why I'm about to do it again this year, superintendent. I'm telling you right now that all these excuses, if you listen to them, are leading you, getting you ready for me to do the same thing again, which is to leave 4, maybe now 6 teachers without a year-end evaluation next year. That is unacceptable.
Yeah.
And that superintendent would have me fired, hopefully, because that is an absolute must. That is one of those what things that all principals must do. And you must do it in a way. You're working with somebody's evaluation. You have to get it done. If we look at what's expected of us, like you said, it's right there. Stop having this idea that it's optional. And I'll be an advocate for No Child Left Behind. Somewhere in 2014, I believe, or not 2014, 2004, somebody had an idea that was good. Somebody was thinking about kids, and they put words on the paper that said, we're doing this for every kid. It was much earlier than 2004, by the way. Somebody had an idea that said, we're going to do this for all kids because they deserve it. Now, I'm not going to say that their measure for getting that done or the supports that they had in place for getting that done were perfect, but boy, somebody was on the right path. Somebody said, there's going to be an accountability system that we are working towards, and we're going to do this for everybody. They started it, and now it's 2025, and we're here to finish it. We're here to say, no, we should be thinking in that direction. We should be thinking about using the things that you set up in place that you think are good for our kids. We're going to get those things done. And not some of them, and not for some kids.
Yeah, yeah. Back to the 10th grade language arts teacher, beating this guy. Yeah. Hey, these are the standards eligible content for 10th grade English language arts. Are you able to, before the school year starts, are you able to ensure that your students have mastered this content and these skills? Hopefully the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
If the answer is not yes, if it's something other than, then everything that's going to follow is an excuse. But everything that's going to follow is just telling us, and what you just said, Mike, that they don't want to,
mm-hmm.
or they don't believe that they can. But really, they don't want to.
Right.
Okay. So just real quick, there's a book I'm reading, The Courage to Be As It's Liked. And what this book is saying is that exact thing. Everybody does exactly what they want. If you communicate that I have this or this or this or this as a roadblock, it's just really because you don't want to. And then you're putting any of those things out in front and saying those are the reasons why it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and flip that real quick. It's easier to say if I'm a language arts teacher, I have 120 kids. I'm gonna try real hard. I'm gonna try my best, right? But what if I call up your school and I say my daughter's in second grade and I say, hey, second grade teacher, is my daughter gonna master all the content that a second grader is supposed to master this year?
Mm-hmm.
What are you gonna tell me? Yes or no? You're gonna do the best of your ability to not to just kind of know what it is and do your best. Is she gonna master what the state of Pennsylvania has said she's supposed to have mastered? Yes. When you're talking about my daughter, yes. And I want you to say yes, but we need you to say yes for every kid who you're teaching. Every kid is the exact same as my daughter, but it's the same thing. As the second grade teacher, this whole system is saying, this is what she needs to have mastered to be successful. That's your job. Are you gonna give me seven reasons why she can't? Or are you just gonna say yes? By any means necessary, yes. The what is gonna happen. She's gonna get it.
Right. And I would hate for this conversation to lead into other things that's like, I don't want to increase people's stress levels, but if you have this idea up front that those things are going to get taken care of, it's my mission to take care of those. So when other little district initiatives pop up and you're like, oh, it's just one more thing I have to do. Nope, it's not one more thing that I have to do. It's what's going to get done. It's getting done. You bet. But primary on my list is what I have to teach your kids. And I'm going to get it done. And if I need help, I'm going to use my words and I'm going to ask for help. I'm getting stuck getting to the end. And I think I need some help. I can't say that there's a whole lot of people out there that wouldn't listen to you asking for help. And I think that that's a big word of encouragement, even for all teachers, for veteran teachers, for new teachers. I'm having trouble reaching my goal. I really feel that I'm struggling to reach that goal. I need help. Boom. I guarantee there's going to be somebody jumping in line to give you that help. And if there's not, who else are you going to ask? Because I'm not done asking, because again, it's so serious that I get that what done. If one person can't answer my question, I'm going to another person. And another person, because it's important to me. If I have a goal in place, or if I know what the what is, but I'm having trouble reaching that what, as I see the year progressing, I need to be able to use my words and ask for help. And then if I'm not getting the help that I need right away, I take it upon myself to ask others and to be curious and poke around all the resources that are in front of me, because again, not reaching that goal shouldn't be an option for me. So if at any time I feel that I'm not getting the progress that I need, or I feel I'm not going to reach it, I got to ask for help.
Right. And there are a lot of hopefully resources in your space, if you're a teacher, to help make that happen, you know, and I think it's easier to kind of, like we've already said, and I'm not bashing teachers at all. Like I said, I've been there for a long time, and I'm sitting there right now working in this space. It's easier to come up with some reasons why we can't than it is to say, I'm going to get this done, you know? And I think in talking about the what, it's not really up to us to define the what big picture for our grade level and our content. That's defined for us. And we must kind of embrace that and say, this is what I'm required to teach. I'm the master. I'm the human being in the space that gets to decide how we're going to get there and how we're going to deliver this and all of those things. But the what is determined largely, and we can't go rogue. We can't say, well, that's kind of there. I'm going to do this other thing because I don't believe in that. Then that's not a path anyone wants to go down.
Right. And I want to simplify it too on like, how do I get this done? I worked with a very, very competent teacher for many years within my own department. And she helped me along the way by, and it really didn't occur to me until then. I was very young when I came into this position, but she really helped me look at the curriculum and say, let's look very broadly. And I'll reference Spanish. So if we say that Spanish 2, it's a difficult class to teach sometimes. So it's all the past tense. There's two past tenses. We have a lot to do in Spanish 2. And she told me, she goes, just think of Spanish 2, that by the end of Spanish 2, the big focus is that past tense, that kids can talk about the past in Spanish and reference those things. I said, okay, that helps me. Thank you. She goes, but there's so much more in that course than just the past tense. That's the biggie. She goes, there's also these things layered in there, direct object pronouns, indirect object pronouns, vocabulary about these areas of the world or vocabulary about these situations. I said, okay, great, thank you. And then she said, let's lay this out like by the month. She goes, let's think of it. It's easier to digest if we break these things up into months and say that in September, we're going to start teaching this. And then hopefully in October, it kind of leads to this. And we went all the way through until June. And it so helped me as a young teacher to think of it in terms of that. What did I need to teach? It's all right here. It was laid out in the curriculum. What resources do I have? Did the book follow that same line that our curriculum for the district had? Not really. You're going to need to fill in some spaces in and around here. And this is what I used to do that. And so when you get to the end of January and you haven't gotten to this, you might want to think of your pacing on what that looks like if you want your goal to be the past tense. And we would have really good conversations about that. And I really strongly want that for every single teacher that's listening to this podcast. I hope you either are that person for somebody or you have that person for you that can think of teaching and learning and that what, and know what that is and how to lay that out for yourself so that it becomes such a less daunting task when you're lesson planning daily.
But then once you have all that kind of laid out the way that you just really in a real way talked about, Mike, those daily what's, the daily lesson objective become so much easier to write, right? Because I know this big thing that I'm working towards the end of the year. I know clearly what I am teaching in this unit, what the goal is for this unit. And then I am creating individual lessons within that that have very focused purposes, very focused, clear objectives to meet that bigger goal in the unit. And I do that every day. This is my goal for this lesson. I'm taking these kids through these experiences that I get them to meet that concrete goal. After, like we talked about, you talked about stacking the bricks in the wall. After I stack those, I've met the goal for this unit. Everybody has. Every single kid has got those skills through this lesson, the what. And I keep crossing those off as they are mastered, not as they're covered. As everybody has mastered those things, I cross those off. And, you know, we could do a whole lot more podcasts on kind of falling back or what happens if we're struggling to teach the what, to meet those goals, you know. But it's very, very important that it's not just covered, that I haven't just put it out there, that the students have learned and mastered. That's very, very important
too. Right. And I think I want to kind of wrap up my train of thought around this because I don't want to keep beating it up too much. But we've talked a lot about, you know, interviewing people and people sitting in interviews. And I want to connect that to what we learned, hopefully that we all learned and accepted in our training in writing objectives about how the students or all students will be able to. And I'm going to connect that to job interviews. When we sit in job interviews or we listen to people in job interviews, we don't hear people say that, you know what, when I walk into a classroom, I expect that some students will be able to meet the objective that I have for that lesson. Others won't, but some will. If you say that in a job interview, I'm just betting dollars to donuts, you're probably not going to get the job. So think back to that phrase, and then think back to the traditional education that we have in becoming teachers when we write objectives for all students will be able to, and focus in on that. Focus in on that yes or no. When I have an objective for this lesson, all students are going to be able to reach it. They are all going to reach it, not be able to. They are all going to show me that they've reached it. Boom, you've got yourself a building block, and that's a Monday. Monday might be working to Friday. Friday might be working till the end of the month. The end of the month might be working to the end of the year. Those building blocks are essential, but they've got to be yes, no building blocks because you wrote that objective. If you wrote that objective and set it for your class, it's important for everybody, not just some. Make it reachable.
And now what you're talking about a little bit is assessment of the what, yeah. Right? We're talking about measuring the what. And teachers, you're in a system that for over 100 years has seen this differently than what we're kind of talking about right now. You know, traditionally school ranks learning. And there are still systems, I guarantee it, in your school where you're teaching right now that ranks learning and tells us kind of that we're just supposed to rank learning, best to worst. And there's always going to be a best and there's always going to be a worst. There's class rank in high schools still across the country. We have to know who's the best and we have to master things. And when I teach something, I have a goal and my goal is for you to be able to do it and know it. That's either a yes or a no. And I can do that every single day if I think that way. All 20 of my kids are going to get this today. Yes. Yes. Not this kid can do it with this proficiency all the way down to this kid who's the worst at it. No. And that flip of what we're talking about breeds checkout from kids, breeds this very inconsistent system where teachers feel as though I can't do this. I think we make it so much more difficult than it is sometimes in education, Mike. And teachers might feel like I have so much to do. I have so many requirements that I'm supposed to fulfill and so many different aspects of my job. When you really think about it, you don't. You have stuff that you're supposed to teach. Your kids are supposed to master that. Teach it, master it. Teach it, master it. Are there like nuances and so much complexity to that? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But can we do that? Yes. And I'm not willing to say we can't. And I don't think any other teacher should be either. No.
And some of those challenges, when we see those challenges, maybe resort back to the other things that we've talked about. Let's think about the who. I don't want to dive back into that. But when we have challenges with the what, we should probably lean into the who. I'm having trouble getting to that piece of what that you want me to do. More than likely, look at who's filling the space. What are those needs? Your own included.
And I'm going to tell you that there's a reason why we talk about the who before we talk about the what. Because to present the what, you have to know the who. You have to know your who is yourself and the who of the learners. And if your what is off, like you just said, you most likely something has gone wrong in the who. And that's where a lot of educational people miss. That's where a lot of curriculum people miss. They think this school district had success with this. We're just going to do this exactly the same way they did it and get the same results. They forget about the who. They might be okay on the what, but the who goes into the what. And I'm talking in these big words, but I think that's so, so important. If you're not getting the what, fall back to the who.
Yeah. I really hope that this episode shined a light on that what and where it comes from, how to access it, how to divide it up into chunks that are attainable, how to assess it, how you're going to assess every student's mastery toward it. I wanted this episode. I know you did too, and I'm very glad that we brought this out, because I think that it's too often forgotten about. I think it's one of those pieces that when we get into our profession and we start really diving into teaching in a classroom, this might be one of the easier pieces to forget or to maybe take our eye off of for a day or two or a week or two, and then we're just stunned by where we might be in our continuum. So I'm very, very glad that we talked about this.
And I just want to finish by saying, Mike, that, you know, as the world is changing really quickly, and it is, and as things like AI are present, you as a teacher might have questioned why it is that you teach or what, right? And that always evolves. The what always evolves. But it's not your responsibility in the moment, as you're supposed to be teaching this course, to push back against that what and say, I'm not going to do that, or I don't agree with that. Or, yeah, I agree. Whenever are my kids ever going to know this? I'm not going to teach that. That's not the role. Those are conversations you can have with your district. Those are conversations society can have with the governing bodies. The what is the what? And it's our job to do the what.
I agree. So thank you for this. This was a great conversation.
Okay, Mike. Appreciate it.
All right. Next week.